Welcome to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast, where we go beyond the rankings and explore the strategies and leadership that drive firm performance. Today's guest holds one of the most distinct titles in public accounting, Chief Execution Officer. I'm excited to welcome Jeff Palo, Principal and Chief Execution Officer at Brady Marks. In this role, Jeff acts as the Chief Evangelist and Strategic Driver behind the firm's Vision 2028 initiative, helping align the execution across priorities, growth activities, and long-term transformation. Jeff joins us with more than three decades of experience in the profession, including founding the Growth Partnership in 1999, where he was at until 2024 when he joined Brady Marks. Today, we're going to unpack what execution really means at a firm level, how it will influence performance, and why firms should care about execution as a discipline in its own right. So Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Chelsea, so good to see you again, and thanks for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So many listeners may have not heard of a chief execution officer. It's certainly a unique position. Can you define what your role looks like inside of Brady Marks?
Yeah, it's the best title in the profession. And we joke, like, you know, if you answer the question, then it's too late. But execution doesn't refer to me coming in and trying to cut your head off. It refers to us trying to execute against our strategic priorities, which are memorialized in something that we call Vision 2028. It's our strategic planning document, and it shows where we want to be as a firm on October 1st of 2028. And my role is to make sure that we get there. And so I'm working primarily with the principals to make sure they're doing what we need them to do in order to execute the corporate strategy. And if you ever watch Game of Thrones, in a lot of ways, I could be described as the hand of the queen. Stacey Dettoit is our CEO, and she is a bright and shiny leader that is very motivating, and people really are drawn to her. My job is to kind of come behind that and make sure things actually get done.
Okay, interesting. So you often hear execution and strategy used interchangeably. How do you distinguish the difference between those two?
Yeah, I think strategy is the compass, right? That's where we want to go and how we want to get there. Execution is actually taking the steps on a day-to-day basis to make sure that it happens. We can have great strategy, but if we don't have execution, they end up being just words on paper. And you know, one of the things that I know we talked about at the Growth Partnership is something we would have some fun and we would say, how bad does your firm SAG? Well, SAG was an acronym for the skill and availability gap. And if you look at that, you know, the people who are leading accounting firms today didn't go to school to be marketers or talent officers or, you know, IT professionals, whatever the case may be. They went to school to be accountants, and that's exactly what they are. They can debit and credit with the best of them. But in today's complex environment, especially for larger firms, it's more of a corporate model. And so at some level, the people who are in charge of running these firms are very one-dimensional in terms of their educational background. You know, they went to school to be a CPA. Three out of four of them, if they got a master's degree, it was either a master's in accounting or a master's in tax as opposed to an MBA. And then if you look at the way that the states handle CPE, you know, there's a soft skills are almost frowned on. It's a, you know, there's a minimum technical requirement that you need. And I don't want to diminish the importance of technical excellence. I think that's kind of assumed. Okay. But at some level, we've got people in leadership positions that don't have a background in the functional areas that it takes to lead and manage a firm. And, you know, if I've depressed you here 5 minutes in, wait, there's more. You know, we live in a very billable environment. And so, you know, let's say you take an average shareholder, maybe they work 2,400 hours over the course of the year, and half of that is chargeable. So they got 1,200 charge hours. All right, you got 1,200 left to do something with. You know, that's not a lot of time if you break it down on a weekly basis to really lead and manage your firm. And so I've yet to encounter the shareholder who complains about how much non-billable time they have laying around and they can't figure out what they want to do with it. We're all very, very busy. But when you talk about things like strategy, and our Vision 2028 is very specific. We want to be a $100 million firm by the 1st of October on 2028. We're about 80 million now. So we got a little ways to go. We want to have $1 billion of assets under management. We're close to 900, so closing in on the bogey there. But for us to cross the finish line at or ahead of those metrics, there's things we have to do next week to make sure the job gets done. And that's kind of what my role is.
Okay. So it sounds like those great strategic planning meetings that everybody has, your job is to make sure that those great ideas don't stay at that meeting and never get brought up again, but make sure that gets executed on throughout the year.
Yeah. Strategic planning is fun. It's not that hard. It's the, hey, what do we do the next day after the meeting? That's where the challenge lies.
Right. Great ideas. But now I have an inbox full that I need to get back to in my real job. So we'll just leave all that behind. So you talked a little bit about some of the ideas and the vision 2028. So are there any other core pillars? And why did the firm choose execution as a dedicated C-suite focus? Was it tied to that vision 2028?
Yeah, Yes, in a way, I think they saw the skill set that I had. And, you know, Brady March was one of our biggest clients while I was at the Growth Partnership. So we had good familiarity with each other. But if you look at Vision 2028, you know, there's the revenue and the AUM goals, but we also want to have incredible customer experience. We want to be seen as experts in the markets that we choose to practice in. Mm-hmm. We want to have a great employee experience because talent is at a premium these days. And then we want to have digital acceleration. We have to be cognizant of what's happening, not only with technology, but also with AI. Yeah. And, you know, there's an operational component to all of that as well. So there's six things that we're really focused on trying to move forward. Some of them have a hard, metric in terms of dollars, mm-hmm. and others have a metric in terms of, well, what does this look like if we achieve it?
Right. And how do you measure those kind of harder to measure success points?
Yeah, it's a little bit harder. But for example, employee experience is important to us. So we can look at, hey, what is our turnover rate? What does our attrition rate look like? How has that been historically compared to now? We might use a tool like the IPA survey to see how we compare against our peers. And what's great about that is we can dial in. Sometimes we look at our peers as the big firms, mm-hmm. but then we're also in secondary markets based out of the Dakotas. So we can look at firms in geographical areas that are similar to ours. And that's the kind of nuance that can tell you, hey, are we leading or lagging on a particular metric? So, you know, not to give you a shameless plug, but we use it all the time.
We'll take all the shameless plugs. So you listed a lot of priorities there: growth, client experience, service delivery, talent, AI. So what takes precedent when you're looking at the day-to-day? And I know the answer, you know, feels like it should be, well, they're all equally important, but how do you juggle that?
Yeah, you know, actually they're not. And that's a great question. So one of the first things that I did when I joined the firm was to put together an annualized planning process that lived within the broader context of Vision 2028. And so the way that works is in early December, our board of directors gets together. Our fiscal year starts on October 1st. So in the beginning of December, they can look at the prior year financial results. They can kind of see how things are going in terms of the performance year. And their job is to say, okay, ultimately, we've got to achieve what's outlined in Vision 2028. Given what we're seeing, what are the things we need to emphasize this coming performance year that starts on July 1st in order to make sure we cross the finish line? And so this year, what they came out of their strategic planning session with is that we want to double down this year on employee experience. We want to double down on growth. We want to double down on digital acceleration, specifically becoming what we call a data forward firm. So we call those emphasis areas. And so now we go through a process where initially all of our industry and service line leaders will prepare their 3 to 5 initiatives for the upcoming performance year. So Amy, who is our construction practice leader, will be considering 3 to 5 things that they want to accomplish over and above just kind of delivering the numbers, right? So how do we get better? How do we get more efficient? How do we develop more expertise? And she'll look at the construction landscape and also say, here's what the board is asking us to emphasize. And as she builds her 3 to 5 initiatives, you know, she'll be mindful of trying to align with what the board is requesting of them. And so multiply that now across all of our industry line leaders, all of our service line leaders. The other things they do at that point in the process is identify any asks that they have of our functional leaders. So does Amy need something from our CGO? Does she need something from our talent officer? Does she need something from the technology team? And then those all funnel up in aggregate from all of our industry and service line leaders to the respective functional leaders. So Dan McIntosh, who is our CGO, he gets a list of all the marketing and growth and business development asks that are coming out of these plans. And then he can, there's two reasons for that. A, is there something here that we really need to discuss because it requires significant resources and time? Or are there things here that kind of have a common theme where Dan might say, you know what, there's 5 different people asking for that. I'm going to build an overarching growth initiative that supports these 4 or 5 initiatives below me and align his plan that way. And so we've just gone through that portion of the process. We're waiting for everybody to kind of get their final drafts to us. And then we'll be pushing things back to the industry and service line leaders. They'll finalize their drafts. They'll have between now and the end of May to get that done. And as part of that, we're a traction firm, so we're big adherence to EOS. They'll come up with their draft of quarterly rocks to get that initiative completed, and then their first quarter tasks. And then the final month in June is putting together the budget. And what's kind of cool about that is our performance year starts on July 1st. So they'll have their budget in place at the end of June, but our fiscal year doesn't start until October 1st. So our controller then, our CFO, has 90 days to assimilate all that information into her budget and forecast for the upcoming year. So it's a pretty cohesive process that seems to be going really, really well. And I think this year we had something like 57 unique initiatives.
Wow.
And at the last check-in, we do quarterly check-ins, and we just did Q3. I want to say that of the 50 plus that we've got, I want to say 42 were on track.
Nice.
And so if you look at that, you're like, okay, initially people say, well, that's a crazy number. How do you do 42 things? Well, you know, you've got 15 people that are doing 42 things. So any one person is responsible for maybe 3.
Yeah.
And it's block and tackling. You know, what are you going to do tomorrow to take a step toward accomplishing that goal?
Right. I'm getting the image in my head of just like an orchestra, and you are the conductor, and everything is moving in its own paces, and it all sounds beautiful when it's all put together.
That's probably a pretty good analogy. And what I like about that is, you know, the conductor doesn't play an instrument, so I have to give credit where credit's due, and that's with the people that are actually getting it done. You know, my job is to coordinate and orchestrate, but they're the people that actually produce the results. So, you know, I can't do my job if they're not doing theirs, and they're doing a fantastic job.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit more about execution. It seems like something that firms really struggle. You know, we joke about the strategic planning meeting that nobody does anything with, but what are some common execution failures that you see inside of firms that don't make the leap into success after the planning?
You know, I'll share an example from Brady Marts, but I don't think we're different from most firms. I came out of the environment of founding and running the growth partnership for, you know, 25 years, you know, so I had a very owner-centric mindset. And, you know, granted, TGP was a $3 million firm, and, you know, we could see the needle move and what have you. So when you're an $80 million accounting firm and you're a shareholder, well, you've kind of come up in the organization. You didn't found it. Uh-huh. And at some level, your performance has rewarded you with the opportunity to be an owner. But I don't know that that necessarily creates the ownership mentality, right?
Yeah.
I think they know intellectually they're an owner, they get a K-1, you know, and what have you. Theoretically, there could be a capital call, right? But I think that's different than having a day-to-day owner mentality. And so one of the things that I'm really working to instill in our shareholders is the sense that, hey, we are all in business together. You know, like we all own this business together. And if we approach it as owners, then potentially how we behave is different than we just think that this is a job that we have got.
Right.
And that's hard. I think we struggle with that. I think most firms struggle with that. You know, there was one initiative that we were rolling out early on that dealt with, you know, developing more client intimacy, especially with our larger accounts. And as part of that, there was an ask for us to get face to face with our key accounts. And we set a metric that some people perhaps thought was too aggressive. And it was reported back to me that a comment from one of the tables was that, well, they'll never get that out of me. And my question to that was, well, who's they? Because the person who made the comment is an owner, you know, so we're no different. We both own this business together. And so, you know, trying to crush that mindset and get people thinking like, my goodness, I own this incredible asset. What can I do on a daily basis to be driving enterprise value? Uh-huh. That's a completely different mindset than just coming in and, hey, well, I got to hit my charge hours and what have you. So we've done a lot over the last 2 years to align the firm, I think, to better resonate with that mindset. And that's important, I think, because you got to have the alignment for the execution to happen.
Yeah. We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
So what steps can firms take to kind of bring that ownership mindset to their partner group? Because that is tough. I mean, at IPA and on the podcast, we talk a lot about transparency and, you know, it's hard to know where you're going if you've not been given any direction. But any other ways that you think firms can work on that?
Well, I think you have to align your performance and compensation systems with what the behavior is you're trying to drive. And Stacy, our CEO, is such a visionary. One of the things that she has created that didn't exist previously was this bonus pool that grows or constricts based on performance. So if we have a really good year, the bonus pool is getting bigger. If we're struggling, the bonus pool might get smaller.
Yeah.
But it isn't a situation where everybody gets an equal slice of the pie. We've put a performance management system in that says, hey, here are the metrics that we want to evaluate you on. And so we've got business development and growth metrics. We've got production metrics. We measure whether or not you're living our core values. And then there's a subjective piece to that as well. But at the end of the day, you know, you're going to get a ranking that is going to put you somewhere in a range of buckets with other performers that were comparable to you. And then people are going to get a slice of the pie based on which bucket they're in. And the system is designed that I think the maximum spread could be 4x, right? Yeah. So let's say, you know, hypothetically, you know, your slice was $1. Well, in the model, there is an avenue for people to earn $4. And there's also a mechanism for people to earn $0. So we want to make it real. And I think once that alignment was put in place, you started to see the types of questions that people were asking really evolve, because it's amazing how everybody has become focused on their metrics. And there were some things in how we were calculating the metrics that we had to refine because they weren't spot on. Uh-huh. And people have brought that up and they're, you know, now we're living in a real world situation. And like, well, what about this? What about this? And we're having kind of evolve as we go through it. I'm looking forward to, we'll split that pie for the first time under the new model in October. And I'm looking forward to it because if we do our job right, we should be able to be completely transparent about that. Mm-hmm. And everybody look at that and be like, you know, maybe personally, I wish I had gotten more, but this passes the smell test.
Yeah.
Because, you know who your high performers are, especially in any given year. And that would be my goal, is that at the end of the day, hopefully we get to a point where we can be completely transparent on that and everybody feels good about it, because it's primarily objectively based on variables that can be completely controlled by each of the practitioners.
I think that that's great. I mean, it's very common for firms when they get, you know, $20 million and above to really close that compensation system. And even if it's just at the bonus pool level, but having some transparency and saying, you know, even if you only got $3 and Joe got $4, well, that's something to look up to. And how do you, you know, hit your metrics, you know, next year, and gives you some standards to work off of. So I think.
Yeah. I think the challenge is not so much, okay, I got $3. It's, well, what does $3 mean?
Yeah.
Like, who else got $3? Who got $5? Who got $1? And I think that context, I mean, people are naturally competitive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I look at that and say, oh, well, $3, I got $3 and Amy got $3 and Amy killed it this year, so I'm kind of lumped in with her, then I feel good about that.
Yeah.
You know, versus if I get $3 and I'm lumped in with somebody that I perceive barely comes to work, right? Then I got some concerns. Where the problems come in is when I don't know, I have the reward, but I don't have the context. Mm-hmm. So is $3 great? Is $3 awful? I think we'll work toward dispelling that.
Yeah. So one of the other roles that you're involved in at Brady Martz is identifying acquisition opportunities. So how does execution influence acquisition targets and integration?
So we are violently independent. We, as you can imagine, Stacy fields five calls a day from various PE firms. And what's interesting about Brady Martz is we're probably maybe a little mature for our size in terms of our C-suite and functional expertise. Mm-hmm. We're probably what you would expect to see more in a $125 million firm than what you'd expect to see in an $80 million term in terms of just our functional leaders. But that makes us an incredible candidate for a PE looking for a flagship firm. Like, we could deliver that turnkey and honestly probably command a pretty significant premium because of that. We just don't have any interest in it. And part of that is you got to ask yourself, well, what would you do with the money? We've run the firm in a very fiscally conservative way. We feel like we've got the capital that we need to invest. When we make an acquisition, it's in the mindset of helping 1 + 1 = 3. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a reason to combine beyond just the combination, right? We don't want to be bigger just to be bigger. We want to be bigger with the right type of people and the right type of markets.
Yeah.
And the other thing in that is we really focus on serving secondary markets. So we're in Sioux Falls, we're in Fargo, we're in Grand Forks, we're in Bismarck, you know, kind of that second tier market. We're not in Minneapolis, you know, we're not in Kansas City. And that's fun. We do very well in those markets. There's all kinds of economic opportunity and robust business happening there. But I don't know that we would look for an acquisition in downtown Minneapolis. You know, we'd probably look for one in St. Cloud or Rochester, you know, type of thing. So staying on strategy with those M&A conversations is really, really important. But we're also cognizant that as PE continues to kind of snowball down the hill, you got to compete with that. And, you know, we're hearing, haven't seen it yet, but we're hearing where some of the national firms that are PE backed are undercutting some of the regional firms that aren't PE backed in terms of rates, which mm-hmm. seems like it's upside down, but they're trying to grow at all costs. So, yeah. In some of the bigger markets, there's some interesting pricing shenanigans going on right now. We're fortunate that we haven't seen a ton of that, but we've got a couple of large regional competitors that we suspect are having conversations with PE. And so we'll have to really pay attention to that if it happens, to see how that manifests in pricing in the markets that we serve.
Yeah, it's a big job. So how do you build accountability into execution without it feeling punitive to not hit your targets?
Yeah, I think the first thing is making sure that people feel that they can control whether or not they hit their target. Right? Like if you give me a metric, but at the end of the day, I'm not completely in control of that.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a morale buster. Because I can do my job and still not win. So we spent a lot of time thinking about, can they 100% control these metrics?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we kind of gamified it. We have a fantastic dashboard that each of our shareholders can look at that show exactly what we want them to perform against. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about developing client intimacy. Well, one of the things we're measuring is the number of major interactions that each of our shareholders has with their top clients. And that means engaging with them over and above what they're paying us to do for them, right? Because we know that those conversations create fertile ground for cross-selling opportunity and advisory work.
Sure.
You know, there are some people that are ahead of pace. There are some people that are below pace. There are going to be some people that finish the year nowhere close. But at the end of the day, you know, every lunch that you ate at your desk, you know, every breakfast that you ate at home, you know, those are all opportunities that you might have had to go visit with some of your clients and get some face time. And so I'll be disappointed for people that didn't hit their metric, but at the end of the day, it was their choice not to do that. And I think if you can reduce it to that, I've got a choice to make. And if I make the correct choice, I can drive what I'm being asked to drive, then it kind of accelerates. The cool thing about the dashboards is it gamifies it a little bit because everybody can see everybody else. So if I'm behind on my major interactions, but my buddy, you know, across the hall is leading, maybe that creates a little competitive fire in me and I all of a sudden find time to do that. At the end of the day, you don't want it to be punitive, right? You want it to be accelerative. You know, hey, let me give you the dashboard so you know how you're doing. And if you're lagging, you can pick up the pace. If you're leading, you can like double down and go for more. Give people the real-time information to perform and, you know, hold them accountable for what they're able to do.
Yeah, no surprises then. They've seen it all along. They knew where they stood and any choices are theirs. It's in their circle of control.
Right.
So if a managing partner asks where to focus first to improve execution inside of their firm tomorrow, what's your advice for them?
I think the first thing is to make sure everybody's on the same page, right? And so that's where our vision 2028 comes in. We all know that we got to get to 100 million and to a billion, right? That everybody in the firm could tell you that. You've got to have that kind of clarity. Otherwise, everybody can be working hard, but pulling in different directions, which doesn't create any cohesion. So I think it starts with the roadmap. And like vision 2028 is our compass. It's the North Star. That's where we're heading. Then as we think about, okay, well, what do I need to do about that today? That becomes a little bit more tactical and that can be managed. You know, so those are the type of things that we're trying to say with our initiatives that, hey, if we want to get to a billion and 100 million, then as the construction leader, what do you need to do this year to contribute your portion of movement toward that goal? And as Amy pulls together her initiative, she'll be thinking about that and she'll have an initiative about, hey, we want to grow by 15% and we want to improve margin by this, you know, what have you. The initiatives, once you've got your direction plotted, then the initiatives kind of, it's the gas in the car to get you there.
Yeah. Well, this has been so interesting. I really appreciate you joining us on the Inside Public Accounting podcast and thinking about execution, you know, not as just a buzzword, but as really a core discipline that firms need. And for our listeners, if you're reflecting on your strategy or your execution this quarter, you know, think about how you're executing and not just what you're planning. The execution is the difference between your growth and hitting your vision 2028 targets and growth that's stalling. And, you know, if you like the show, subscribe, share it with the leaders inside of your firm. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes where we'll interview other leaders in the accounting profession and break down some data that firms should be paying attention to. Thanks for listening. And Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Chelsea, so good to see you again. And just keep up the good work. And like all kidding aside, it is IPA is just, and not just the survey, but the entire ecosystem, you know, such a just asset for the community to have. So keep up the work that you're doing there. It's important. And, you know, we're definitely dialed in.
Thanks.